to resolve. It's a call-in show, and you're invited to participate. That's on Thresholds, Thursdays at 3 p.m. here on KPFT Houston.
You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Listeners should be aware that the following program contains language and audio images which may be found disturbing and may not be suitable for your snotty-nosed little brat who probably cusses like a sailor behind your back anyway. Parental discretion is advised.
Greetings and welcome to another edition of Technology Bites.
Yes, thanks for that rousing intro, Flicked.
I'm so excited.
I know. I
just can't hide it.
It's big news in the Flicked world, and for anybody, actually, who is a fan of Pi.
More for Flicked, though.
Yeah.
It's too bad they didn't open up on March 14th.
Missed opportunity.
I wouldn't have been able to go.
I know, but still.
So you're wishing that on me?
I'm not wishing that on you. I'm wishing it on them.
Oh, okay.
Way to suck an insult out of that, though. Congrats. All right, welcome to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Wonder Twin Powers Activate. Groove House.
All right, and in the studio tonight with
Form
us.
Form of Groove.
Form of Groove House.
Form of Interruption. Well, we got a guest in the studio tonight. Barrett is responsible for the guests. I'll let him do the intro.
Don't blame me for this one.
Whoa. He's backpedaling.
No. Yeah, tonight we've got Annika O'Brien, who is a recent addition to Houston. She's a roboticist, philanthropist, and maker. So we figured we would invite her out to the Geek Gathering, and she's sitting in with us on the show tonight.
Hello.
Yeah. So we were going to do it second hour of the show, but I guess if you've got robot questions or maker questions or anything like that, you can call in tonight with those. And then we'll talk to her about that stuff specifically as the show goes on tonight.
Yeah. They were giving me a little bit of grief earlier for not having brought a robot with me.
She has no robots. This is false advertising.
But she bring a computer?
This is radio. Can't you lie and say you did bring one?
Let me check my bag.
Wait a minute.
She brought every robot.
There we go. There goes a robot.
You know, it just never does live up to the hype, does it?
I have an inhaler. Does that count?
Is it autonomous?
My asthma.
Only if Milhouse were here.
It's geeky, but yeah, I don't know if it's robotic.
It's geeky, all right.
No, you know, I think breathing is important, though. So welcome to the show. We're glad you could tune in. If you want to learn more about Technology Bites, you can go to geekradio.com. Yay, geekradio.com. And also, we hang out on IRC because we're old-fashioned like that. So irc.cuckoo.com in the channel Tech Bites. If you don't know how to use an IRC client or you're just too lazy to download one, you can go to our website, use the clever Java interface that we have there for that.
Because Java's safe.
It is. Our Java's completely safe. We would never, ever
ours is impervious to exploit.
I don't know when I've updated. It's the software itself has not been updated in a long time. But if somebody exploits us to our Java site, good luck with that. You'll get access to all of our podcasts for free. Oh, wait.
We do not have any frame injections exploits that Jay's aware of.
Well,
no CSurf.
You know, it's not like we're running Joomla anymore. So, anyway,
are
we've
we?
Got...
No, okay. We're not.
You can't recognize as a WordPress blog.
Well, we keep that updated, but... All right, so we got Annika in the studio, so if you have... And after I told her she had to turn her phone off, my phone goes off. So.
Way to go.
Yeah, I know, I'm a loser. Yeah. So we have Annika in the studio, so if you have robot questions, you can call in with robot questions.
Or 3D printing.
3D printing. Mm-hmm.
Or drones.
Do you do two-color 3D printing?
Or just... Yes, actually. I have a heart sitting on the seat in my car right this moment.
See, she didn't bring a robot, but she brought a
heart. I brought a 3D printed heart. Aww. It is, I showed it to someone earlier, and they said, did you rip that from your ex-boyfriend's chest?
Yes, because he's made of plastic.
I printed him, too.
Well, he is from Southern California. But,
All right.
That works for Dallas, too.
Plastic.
Does it?
Keep Dallas plastic?
I'm just
keep
making
Austin
things
Mears? Like, yeah. Yeah, I've seen the T-shirt.
All right.
That doesn't mean it's true.
I thought maybe you were somehow referring to Plaztec. That Conan O'Brien thing.
Plaztec.
Plastic.
No.
Plaztec. That sounds like
that was a line from a movie. A little kid, the Indian in the cupboard, or one of those.
The movie.
The movie. Seen. Okay.
It was a clever pun in a children's movie.
Plaztec.
Well, she knows our audience at least.
What kid doesn't like robots?
Who snorted?
And now we just learned that Annika is a snort laugher.
All right. All right. I'm sorry.
That's what the inhaler's for.
That's what the inhaler's for. Okay.
I have a very narrow septum.
Merciless.
Jay knows about that.
Yeah.
He sounds like Darth Vader.
Just ask my piercer about my septum.
Oh, speaking of Darth Vader, you know the original actor who actually played the Darth Vader?
David Prowse.
Yes. His, okay, well, never mind.
You know
I thought
no,
I
we know who it is.
No, because once in a while I will tell kids, you know, that he had such a strong Scottish accent that James Earl Jones.
Did it really change Darth Vader in the movie?
Yeah. I think a Scottish Darth
like
Vader would have been great.
Or like Kenny Baker doing the...
Use the Force.
Use the Force.
Sorry, that was
you are not in the emergency mission this time. All right, so...
We don't really take turns, do we? We just kind of...
You got to fend
it's
for yourself.
Free-for-all.
It's a free-for-all. It is, fend truly.
Although Flicted has complete mic control. So.
This is true. Flicted
you
is
can
ultimate.
Just pull the plug on all of us.
Well, as long as it's...
I'm melting!
As long as it's... Oh, thank you.
Okay.
Flicted exercises control. All right.
That was just a sample of the power of this
don't
fully
look
functional
behind the curtain.
Control board.
See, Flicted is in such a good mood because he's going to House of Pies.
House of Pies is reopening. I'm really excited about that.
I can tell this is
me. I've driven past once, and it was post-fire.
I've had to drive all the way out past the Galleria into the Netherlands. Not the Netherlands, but the Nether Realms.
Yes, the Nether Regions?
Yes. Not exactly that either.
What kind of pie are you
I've actually been to that House of Pies once.
What do you do with those robots? All right.
But yeah, I've gone there a couple times just because this one was supposed to be reopened. It burnt down before, or not burnt down, it got burned before Thanksgiving. And they're like, oh, we're going to open by Thanksgiving. And now it's April. So, yeah, I've been waiting a long time.
At least they didn't announce it yesterday. When you had been torn with whether or not you should get excited or not. All right. So here's what we're going to do now. We're going to take our info shot moment. We're going to go out to San Antonio via the Skype, which, knock on wood, is working, and do the Technology Bites info shot. Take it away, info shot.
It's the Technology Bites info shot. Technology news and commentary by Peter Hughes. Injected directly into your skull.
All right. Well, a couple of these are a little bit older stories, but you know, we've had some gaps in the news anyway, and I wanted a couple of good stories. Because this week, you know, they had the whole IPCC report on global warming and climate change and how it's worse than we thought it was and getting worse quicker than we thought it was. So that's always a nice one. But in the good news front, on the doing something about it, especially with technology, scientists from Stanford University and the University of California at Davis have crunched the numbers and come up with a plan, a real plan, not one of these, you know, not this. Like monorail, come up with a plan for how the entire world might economically and feasibly make the move to 100% renewable energy in the next 20 to 40 years. They wrote, it's a two-part paper. You can find it online. They show in great detail the who, the what, where, and how of implementing a renewable energy-run world, including solutions to economic, material, and transport issues. Jacobson is an atmospheric scientist and professor of civil and environmental engineering. He's director of Stanford's Atmosphere Energy Program and senior fellow at the Woods Institute for the Environment and the Precourt Institute for Energy. DeLucci is a research scientist with a background in economic, environmental, engineering, and planning of transportation systems at the Institute for Transportation Studies at UC Davis. So they know a little bit about what they're talking about. The latest study is an in-depth analysis of a plan originally put forth by these two, which was published in the November 2009 issue of Scientific American. The most interesting determination made as a result of the team's due diligence to the world of energy creation and use was just how much energy the world wastes producing and transporting other energy. So this is one of the things that helps them make their goal. The scientists estimated that the world could reduce its overall energy demand by as much as 30% just by going away from the combustion processes to more efficient electric processes for producing energy and hydrogen fuel cells. So basically the kind of in a nutshell, and you can look up more of it online, but mainly the two claim that the world's energy could be originated from 50% wind, 40% solar, 4% geothermal, 4% hydroelectric, and 2% wave and tidal. They also agree that financial incentives and management systems aimed at conserving energy during peak demand times would be key. Obviously, this isn't a plan where you just like run your air conditioner and open the windows all the time. Much of the plan revolves around the use of electricity and hydrogen fuel cells. That hydrogen would be produced by electricity, which would be generated from wind and solar power. So they go through what's most efficient and all of this. Obviously, there has to be a commitment to doing this right, and it has to be supported by a very smart grid. So it's not a done deal kind of thing, but at the very least, it's a plan that takes us towards the future and that actually leads towards somewhere where ostensibly people want to go, and it's something that's needed. So when somebody says, oh, well, you know, there's no solutions, you know, we've got to keep doing what we've been doing because we don't know any better way. Well, the plans are starting to be made, and so maybe it's time to think about the future and doing something better. This one might be something that you could do on your own, and this one is thanks to Elon Musk. Apparently, Tesla is building the Gigafactory, a giant manufacturing facility that will soon begin pumping out lithium-ion batteries for Tesla vehicles and renewable energy storage units. There's the key thing. These big batteries, you know, a big enough battery to take a car 300 miles is a big enough battery to power your home for a few days, perhaps. And the thing is, when the Gigafactory, you know, the idea behind Tesla cars, as Elon Musk has said, and on the electric side of things, the battery side of things, is that instead of acting like normal economics, you get the Moore's Law effect, where things get better and cheaper and that puts that into the energy sphere. And so when this gigafactory reaches its potential and is producing these big lithium-ion batteries, the cost of those batteries should drop to $125 per kilowatt hour by 2020, which ain't that far away anymore, from a current price of more than $200 a kilowatt hour and dropping 3% each year after that. And what happens, you know, the deal with these batteries, you combine that with solar and suddenly you don't have to be on the grid. And you don't have to really give up much of your, you know, you can afford to have batteries that can keep the power to your house when the sun's not out or when it's a cloudy day and you need to supplement. And it's enough that both Morgan Stanley and Goldman Sachs have reports talking about it. And they're putting out the word to investors to understand this. And the more expensive electricity gets, the sooner this stuff becomes feasible. And the biggest thing that Goldman Sachs mentions in their report is two words that utility companies get the heebie-jeebies when they hear them, which is called grid defection. You know, on the cable side, it's wire cutters. Well, grid defection is the wire cutter version of the utilities nightmare. That's people who, you know, get off the grid. Goldman says, ultimately, the holy grail of solar is to move to a situation where the customer is no longer tied to the grid at all. This may be far off, aside from entailing a much more expensive solar battery system. It may be out of people's comfort zone for 100% reliance on a new system for their electricity needs. That said, decreased reliability from an aging distribution infrastructure, a broadening desire to reduce the carbon footprint, and perhaps most importantly, the reduction of solar panel and battery costs could also work together to make grid independence a reality for many customers one day. They conclude, quote, that it's a high-level exercise, and so they're not they're basically kind of looking to the future. The Morgan Stanley study went further and said that very soon it's going to be in major places like California, New York, Hawaii, where electricity is more expensive, that very soon it's going to be cheaper to have solar than it is to have the grid-tied electricity. So that could lead to a very big change. And the thing to watch for with this, frankly, is the utility companies should be putting their minds to the smart grid. They should be building that new smart grid to help make the future happen. Or they have the choice, or they can try and like strong arm the political system and put up roadblocks to solar, which that is going around. So part of the thing about knowing about this stuff is then you can keep your eye open and maybe, you know, raise your voice when you need to help things stay on a path towards, you know, a better future and a more usable system instead of propping up the same old companies, because who's happy about paying their electric bill every month? I should say that in July, but you know, even now, it doesn't go down like it used to. Now we get the bad news part, or not? You know, it's not bad news. It's the darker side of things. Smaller financial institutions have been warned to look out for attacks that aim to increase the withdrawal limit on customer payment cards for fraud purposes. The deal is they're called unlimited operations by the Secret Service. They can cause financial institutions to encourage large dollar losses. What it is cyber criminals are trying to access the web-based ATM control panels that bank employees use to set the amount of money that customers are allowed to withdraw and where they can withdraw money. You know, they use that to control, you know, the ATMs all talk to each other, and they use that to say that, you know, if you're in far out of the way a stand that you can't get money from your bank card from that particular bank, and that the limit that you can get is, you know, $100 or whatever. To gain access, the cyber criminals target bank employees with phishing emails that aim to trick them into divulging their login credentials. The good old social engineering. The deal is, and they've done this before, in December 2012 and January 2013, A well-planned unlimited operation used a network of people in multiple countries to withdraw funds from customers of the Bank of Muscat, based in Oman, and the National Bank of Ras Al Khaimah, which sounds like Khaimah, PSC, also known as RAC Bank in the United Arab Emirates. The deal is they hacked They broke into prepaid Visa and MasterCard credit card processors in the United States and India, raised the limits, and then they could, you know, drain out these accounts. And they got, in 10 hours, the Bank of Muscat lost $40 million. So it's at least – the plus side is they're pointing out who's targeted and what's going on, you know, what they're looking for. So hopefully people who work in this will be secure. They're advising that institutions update login credentials for systems that manage ATM limits and implement update the login credentials for the systems that manage ATM limits, and also that they should implement multi-factor authentication. You think? Isn't it way past about time for that? You know, you have two-factor authentication to get to your bank account yourself, but you wonder, are some of these banks just – is it just login and password and you're into the ATM control system? Interesting question. And then this one is like – this is sort of the medium good news, and then you look at it a little closer and it's like, geez. Transit authorities in 5 states have ordered 32 new locomotives, pull trains, that are more efficient and faster than their predecessors. And they're pushing them as high speed by some places. In Illinois, they want to put a high-speed corridor between Chicago and St. Louis. After they upgrade the tracks, these new locomotives they're going to buy could reach speeds of 110 miles per hour, which is fairly fast, and faster than Amtrak's current ceiling of 79 miles an hour on the same route. The thing is, does that really make them high speed? If you ask the European Union, their definition is a high-speed train has to be able to go above 124 miles per hour on conventional tracks and at speeds of over 155 miles an hour on tracks that are upgraded for high-speed rail. So by the European Union's definition, although the Charger locomotives feature the latest technology with emissions controls and onboard diagnostics, they're relatively conventional. The new trains are based on a popular European design and top out at 125 miles an hour, which is fast, which is the same speed as the Metroliner that used to run between New York and Washington, D.C. in 1969. So that's kind of a bummer. But, you know, on the other hand, they say that, you know, one of the things that this is the first step. At least when you start opening the door where people can use something that resembles high-speed rail, perhaps they'll want more. And then that could be a step towards us getting a rail system that's truly high-speed. One of the things that's an issue is the United States has all this existing infrastructure, and so you have to, like, you have stuff that already exists, so they don't want to build new. They want to just use what they've got. And that limits us, where in Europe, a lot of it was destroyed, they've been willing to build new. Because frankly, 110 miles an hour ain't high speed if you've been on the Channel Tunnel train, which goes, like, I think it's 180 or 200. And that thing, when you're riding that, you can tell it flies. Which would be so awesome. That would be a great way to get between, say, San Antonio and Houston every Wednesday night and go do the show in person. Of course, that might cost a little bit, but, you know, if it was less than gas, I could see doing it. And now on to new stuff, a couple new things. Amazon, probably product announcements waited till today because Monday and Tuesday they were going to all get caught up in the April Fool's thing. So today, Amazon announced the Fire TV, a new media streaming device that will compete with Apple TV, Google Chromecast, and the new Roku streaming stick. The Fire TV is a set-top box with a Bluetooth remote that supports voice search. That's a little different. Internal hardware, it has a quad-core processor with a dedicated graphics processor and 2 gigs of RAM. It supports 1080p over HDMI and features dual-band, dual-antenna Wi-Fi with MIMO for fast video downloads. Of course, you got to have the other side of that hooked up to your high-speed internet to get anything faster. Amazon claims its Fire TV hardware is 3 times as powerful as its competitor. Since it's new, it's got, you know, should have better hardware. It streams Amazon Prime Instant Video titles as well as content from third-party providers like Netflix and Hulu. Owners can browse through popular movies and TV shows on Amazon Instant Video with personalized recommendations and a watch list, making it easy to find and save content. A new ASAP, Advanced Streaming and Prediction feature, learns what movies and shows you enjoy and gets them ready for you to watch. Apparently, the more you use it, the better it gets at predicting your media choices. Another thing that sets it apart from the competitors, Amazon also bundles games into it with support for a $39 wireless Fire game controller. Well-known gaming studios like Disney, Gameloft, EA, Sega, Ubisoft, and Double Fine are partnering with Amazon to bring their titles to the Fire TV device. Amazon's launching its own game studio with the tower defense game Sev-Zero debuting as the studio's first official game. It's got some extras. Some of this is just kind of, the stuff that you get everywhere. But some of their other extras are photos with slideshows and X-Ray that provides IMDb details for movies and TV shows on a second screen device like a Kindle Fire HDX. You can also get music services like Pandora and Amazon's own music service on the Fire TV starting next month with support for X-Ray, which will display the song lyrics. So there's all kinds of stuff going on with that. It's under $100. It's shipping today. So if you're that psyched about it, you can certainly go on and see about ordering it. And finally, some 4K goodness. Just in case you need a monitor that has 3,840 pixels wide by 2160 high resolution and 8 billion pixels, Samsung claims this can display over 1 billion colors. It's a new 4K monitor from Samsung. It's a 28-inch screen with plenty of real estate and comes with a built-in picture-in-picture feature. This is the first I've ever heard of this, that lets you connect two PCs to the same monitor and view both in full resolution side. You can also use it to multitask. This is a good one. Watch a native resolution video, so you can watch like a high-def video on one side of your screen while, quote, getting other work done on the unused portion of the display. So that should boost productivity dramatically. For connecting computers and peripherals, it has two HDMI and one DisplayPort connection. If you're an Apple-type person, Apple does not have a 4K monitor yet. And it would be, of course, ironic to pair this with a Mac Pro since Samsung and Apple are, like, facing each other in court again. It's already sold out. They just announced it. It's already sold out. But it will be available on Amazon for under $850 and will ship towards the end of April. April 21st is what they're saying right now. So if you're needing some massive 4K goodness and you've got a computer that'll drive it, then maybe you want to consider that. And that's all the news. I'm Peter Hughes.
All right. That's all the news. And he's Peter Hughes.
Don't you love the rhyming?
I do. It's kind of it's National Poetry Month, apparently.
Yes.
Isn't it? You said it was.
I said it was. Although I got that from one of the fans of the show.
David Harold.
David Harold told me that. So, and he told me that on the first. So I assume it's true.
Everything
but
is.
But I don't know.
It's all a lie.
What else
did he tell you, Barrett?
He told me there would be candy, but there was no candy. And the cake was also a lie.
713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air this evening. We've got a whole room full of people that are just waiting to talk to you and answer your questions about robots. And Flickin's on Pie Patrol, so he'll be answering your questions about pies. Yeah?
Yeah, I think I could successfully answer.
What's your favorite kind of pie? I mean, not to get off topic, but why not?
Cream.
Cream pie.
Yeah.
So really, what kind of crust? Like a graham cracker crust or
I really like graham cracker crust, but not necessarily with
cream. So you could basically go to the store, buy a pre-made graham cracker crust and fill it up with
some cream.
Whipped cream and you'd be done.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Cream pie, you mean like chocolate cream or
like meringues?
Meringue.
No, I don't like meringue that much.
No.
Meringue is just whipped egg and sugar.
Right.
Lemon cream.
But chocolate cream's okay. Coconut cream actually is probably one of my favorites.
We approve of your pie.
But the Bayou Goo at House Pies is One of my favorite pies.
One piece tonight? Are you going to go multiple? Are you going to double down? Or how heavy into the pie world are you going to slip?
Actually, I didn't eat
How
supper,
late are you going to be so. There? That's the real question.
Do they close? Are they 24 hours?
They're 24 hours.
They're 24 hours.
So what time do you have to go to work tomorrow?
I don't know. I'm just hoping there's not like a huge line when I get there.
Yeah, that would suck. They don't know. They need to reserve your seat. There needs to be the afflicted chair.
Maybe. The one solo chair that's just in the corner there.
I was excited.
Well, won't it be ironic if you get there and they say, you know, it was pretty slow, and then about 8:30, 8:45, suddenly people started streaming in. It's like they heard about it somewhere.
Yeah, that was you didn't keep your light under a bushel.
We are out of pie.
Send them a link to this podcast.
Should have said they're opening tomorrow. Oh, and talked all about how you were looking forward to it tomorrow.
I meant tomorrow. Yeah, that's what I meant.
You tweeted it and you Facebooked it. You have no one to blame but yourself. All right, 713-526-KPFT. If you want to call and be on the air tonight, we are standing by to take your computer questions and even robot questions and pie questions. I'm not a big fan of the cream pies.
They can really? Do pie calculations.
There you go.
What kind?
I'm more of a fruit pie.
Really? See that?
Raspberry.
That's what I would have pegged you as, Jay. I told everyone you're a fruit pie.
Nice.
See, I could do fruit pies, but I'm not a huge fan of
them. Apple pie.
I prefer cherry.
I had apple pie a la mode for dinner.
What's that?
I had apple pie a la mode for dinner. I'm usually an ice cream person, not as much into the pastries and such, I guess.
I was driving through Houston.
It's a pie show.
Heard this great show.
Jay's been into fruit pies ever since Spider-Man was advertising them to him. There's some comic book references.
I got it. Pecan pie, not necessarily a fruit pie.
Pecan pie.
Solid, loved pecan done right.
The fruit of the nut tree.
The best non-homemade pecan pie I've ever had.
Tread carefully.
Good Company Barbecue.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
Oh, theirs is the best I've had that's
bourbon,
not homemade.
Chocolate pecan
I've been
pie.
There, but I've not had their pie.
You should that's definitely have their pecan pie.
I loved pecan pie until someone told me how many calories were in it.
They're not. Yeah.
You don't eat pie to lose weight.
No. And I'm just to let everyone know, I'm not a calorie counter. Okay. That's not my thing. But
she has a robot for that.
When I was swimming, yes. I have an app.
She
for
can't
that.
Count that high. She's a girl.
Hey, math is not hard.
Math is hard.
Yes. No, I was swimming in college, and
I thought you were saying you're swimming in pie.
No, I was swimming in college.
Said, that's not good for you.
And our swim coach told us how many hours of swimming it would take to burn off one slice of pecan pie, and I've loved it ever since.
It'd probably take less
I've been swimming
hours,
ever since.
Less hours of swimming if you're swimming through pecan pie because of the resistance would be more.
And 13 years later, I finally burnt off that slice.
Yeah, I prefer to think of it as how far would I have to walk because I don't exercise, and then it doesn't matter because it's not going to happen.
Yeah. So you just
eat it anyway.
Chew bigger. Haven't you heard you actually
burn calories
by eating? I chew more slowly. More slowly?
Yeah.
By
that way it lasts longer, so it feels like I've eaten two pieces of pie.
Or swoosh with it and spit it out.
And then I think I've only ate half the calories.
I'm just kidding.
We're not in Rome.
That was on like a Lifetime movie where a girl would chew on pizza and spit it out. It was like I don't know.
Somehow
that's
we're
a
dancing,
different show at
we're dancing really close to a topic we were on last week or so, 2 weeks ago.
Foodies?
No.
That's a recurring topic.
Don't upset the foodies again.
Upsetting
people phones are going to light up.
Yeah, if we want people to call in, all we got to do is start talking.
IRC
about
wants to know if Annika likes the PI kind of pie, like as in raspberry pie. As in like the crunchy layer, four layer, crunchy USB SPI. Topping, sorry. That's, yeah. That's
do you like Magnum Pie?
Yeah.
Oh. I see what you did there. That's clever.
So 80s.
That is pretty 80s.
I got the mustache. I just had to go there. All right.
But
so,
you don't have the Ferrari.
That you
although
know.
His car is yeah. red, right?
Barrett got a Maserati. He just dropped my name at the dealership. Hey, folks.
I didn't actually get a Maserati. I did get a 946.
Hey, folks.
For later.
If you'd like to go down to the Maserati dealership.
So you go to if you go to the Maserati dealership and you mention Annika, they will sell you a Maserati for the price of a Maserati.
for the low price of $260,000. You too could get a Gran Turismo.
Oh, you know Annika, $300,000.
Yeah, it went up a little bit. No, they share the Vespa dealership, Ferrari dealership, and Maserati dealership for all one. So
because they're synonymous.
Yeah. Well, they are.
Because when
Italian.
You think Vespa, you
because
think
when I think brand. I'm too broke for a car, I want people to rub the Maserati.
It's pretty nice. So I got to go down there and like
Did
check out
a Maserati
all the eye candy.
Key fob or
no, they let me go in the back and I get to view all the cars and they've got like race cars. They've got
the
like
glass.
Well, he sent me a text yesterday.
Then they
morning.
Remind you that you know Annika and what's expected of you.
Yeah. No, he sent me a text yesterday morning saying that he was at the Maserati dealership and they didn't have his car for him, and I thought he was kidding, and then he later sent me a photo of the Maserati dealership, but I was
told there was going to be a car waiting for me. Annika said that, and there was not. So, the internet is full of lies. I've learned. You can't trust what you read.
I can't trust women.
Well, you know, you think it's just April Fool's Day, but really it's every day.
Oh, so it wasn't just everybody lying to me. That's suddenly, okay, I see a trend here with what happened yesterday.
How many of your friends got married yesterday or engaged?
God, you know, I was watching the internet memes explode over April Fool's Day, and a handful of people were going nuts because how insensitive it was to use fake pregnancy as an April Fool's joke.
Yeah, that...
Do you think it's insensitive?
Well,
it can be. You never know what's going on with other people's lives. So if someone had maybe some pregnancy issues that day and then suddenly someone's joking about it, I can see where that could be offensive.
I think there are certain topics because there's such a high rate of pregnancy loss and issues with pregnancy. I think it's like 1 in 5. It's not rape and miscarriage are two topics that in a movie are most likely to get a girl to get up and leave the theater.
Really?
Yeah, like violent rape and loss of pregnancy.
Well, I mean rape I could get. Rape
yeah,
I
but
get,
loss but... of pregnancy, because think of statistically how many women get pregnant every year. If 1 in 5, I think it's like, it's like 1 in 5, they say, within the first few months, you know, it's...
Well,
wow.
It's very common.
One of those ones that I wouldn't say it's distasteful, but you just don't get angry if somebody goes off on you, and it's like, that's not
so
funny.
So joking about being pregnant, not good, but wouldn't the same people who are offended by people joking about being pregnant also maybe be offended by people that were just bragging about being pregnant? Maybe somebody gets pregnant and you go, yay.
That's different. Because they're rejoicing in an actual happy moment in their life.
Honestly,
I don't think there's anything wrong with joking about being pregnant, but don't be surprised if 6 months later people actually think you're pregnant because they didn't see the follow-up. Like the amount of people that congratulated me yesterday when I got engaged to Christian Bale.
I think a number of people
that
might still be under the impression that I'm pregnant.
You're not?
I didn't follow
This is
up.
All these new revelations today. It's a whole new world for me. Yeah.
All right, 713.
I'm going to leave my gift in the
this
car then.
I've already got
it's a boy.
713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. It looks like we have a call in the queue. All the other lines are open if you want to call in and be a part of the conversation. It could go just about anywhere. 713-526-KPFT. Hey, Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have on the line?
On the line, first up in the show, we are going to speak with Ron.
Ron, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello there. I just wanted a quick comment. Cobbler trumps pie.
Cobbler trumps pie?
Yes.
Cobbler
blackberry.
Is dropped pie.
Blackberry cobbler.
Cobbler is pie that didn't come out right.
There's something about what your grandmother or great-grandmother tried to teach you about cobbler versus pie that somehow everybody seemed to forgot in the technology age.
No, there, it's
cobbler
one thing if they,
is just so much better.
If they could somehow like take the pie dough and put it in the pie, cobbler style, in a pie, that would be the perfect creation.
Cobbler
pie. That's the one thing you're missing from pie is that, you know, the cobbler, because they take up pie dough and they just drop in you know, clumps into the cobbler, and that kind of cooks, and like especially like with blackberries or whatever, it gets all gummy and soaks up the juices.
See, I do think cobbler is very, can be incredibly good and can be better
but
than
it's
pie.
Missing some pieces though that pie has
right
that
it's probably so. I don't well let's not talk calories to the girl.
I can call her devoid of all
face
calories
it, we're talking major
I no the reason
but
I'm...
also as Boy Scouts we used to do Dutch kettle cobblers.
Yes,
that's how we were taught how to make pie or cobbler
because the Boy Scouts
when
and
we
home
were
ec,
kids
right. I remember in Boy Scouts making what do they call the thing where you put the steak?
Hobo stew. You wrap it all up in aluminum foil and toss it in the fire, and then
get that.
I taught him how to. When I was a kid, I said, "Well, why don't we cook chickens over the bonfire?" And we started buying half chickens, and everyone would stick it on a big stick and cook them. So we learned. They learned how to barbecue.
Hey, these are valuable skills for hungry
children.
Yes,
they are. But yes, I do like cherry pie, so I admit it.
All right, thank you.
Okay, so but I love cobbler better.
All right, thanks for your call. Bye bye. All right.
And so, to clarify, the only reason I mentioned the calories is it's one of the first times in my memory that I remember being told about caloric content. And I had never thought of it before.
I learned about caloric content from Tab.
The pink soda.
Because it had one calorie. And I, being the brilliant young man that I was at the time that I discovered Tab, thought, you know, there's at least a percentage chance that if you leave a little backwash in the bottom, that calorie is going to be in there.
That's the one.
I didn't drink the calorie.
The calorie.
It's like a Tic Tac. They have like 2.5 calories.
The calorie's just floating around in there. And if you like let it sink to the bottom and you don't disturb that, you drink it all the way down, you get zero calories.
Like the worm in the bottle of Mezcal. Tequila.
That's what I think of when I'm drinking a Tab. It's like, whoa, Tijuana. 713-526-5738. You know, this great conversation here. You could be a part of it.
You know, I bet Tab still uses metal, like steel cans with like
with the pull,
pop-top pull tabs pull that tab. Actually completely pull off steel.
That you cut your fingers on?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because Tab just seems like a throwback to like 25 years ago.
I had the Pepsi cans that had the same font as Tab that when you turn to Pepsi cans, it spells out. I don't know if I can say it on the air. The three-letter words that mean S-E.
Oh, yeah, you can say sex on the air.
Disney put that in Farrah Fawcett's hair, so it's fine.
Farrah Fawcett?
No, I was time out. It was in The Little Mermaid's hair.
It was in The Lion King.
It was in The Lion King and the Stars. Yeah. And then there was a Farrah Fawcett promotional poster in the 70s that her hair, the curls in her hair, spelled out.
Disney.
That wasn't Disney, though, but I thought that was Disney.
That's a coincidence.
Yeah. No, really?
No.
I don't think it was a coincidence.
I know there were phallic shapes on the castle in the Little Mermaid cover.
One of the animators was getting fired, and he put that in there, snuck it in there. Didn't tell anyone until it went to print, and now if you have one of those early release DVDs, it's worth some money.
Really?
Yeah, or it's on the internet, too. They Disney tried to pull all of them.
Yeah.
They pulled that faster than Lucas tried to pull his Christmas special.
What did they pull?
Oh, I was joking about the kid.
I'm
Lucas' Christmas special.
Like they pulled it. They pulled them all.
Barrett.
All the DVDs. The DVDs. What? I don't get it. What?
Oh, we got another call coming
Barrett
in.
Barrett is red. Barrett is so bright red right now. Wow.
Well, that's only because I'm looking at Farrah Fawcett right now.
There we go. See, S. E-X.
Yeah, you got to really
I guess so. It is in The Lion King, though. It's pretty obvious.
Subliminal and advertising, you know.
It's like you can see Mickey Mouse ears in the movie Tron, the Disney one, the first one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay, so Alfred Hitchcock, you can see him in...
Almost every movie, right?
And even the sequel to Bates Motel.
Oh, we're in the new one?
That was intentional, though, right?
He always did cameos.
Yeah,
but he was also in the sequel to Bates Motel that came out after he died.
Is that a...
I knew that, but where did they put him in there? Where was he in the movie?
It was a shadow on the wall. This is a famous silhouette. All right, 713.
Tarantino kind of does that, I think. Tarantino shows up in a lot of
his... totally stole everything from Hitchcock.
Hitchcock, yeah.
I'm saying he...
Peter Jackson does it, too. Yeah, like, I just saw the recent...
he's like a waiter.
Desolation of Smog, and he's like walking through, and he bites off
a
carrot.
Seen
right,
that? Is it
you're
out?
Right.
No, I rented it. You can rent it on. You can stream it right now from Amazon.
Saw it
I didn't see it at the theater though. I missed it.
I saw it at the theater. It was
I wanted
good.
To.
It was.
Oh, so
funny.
Is it like the $15 thing?
It's not even a rental. You have to purchase it. It's like like $12-14, and it's yours.
It was fine.
So
it's funny at the end how many people were like, "Oh my gosh, I can't
believe
how it ended."
No,
no, because if you know anything about The Hobbit, you know it's one book split up into three, as opposed to the other
the
other ones were three books.
They made a trilogy out of a single story.
Yeah, so a lot of people expected a full movie. They didn't expect a third of a movie.
Yeah,
just like Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse, I see you have a call on the line.
Yes, we do.
Who is it and what do they want?
Up next, we're going to speak with Corey.
Corey, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, I have a question for Annika about robots.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, I didn't like the first two Transformer movies. So I didn't bother with the third one.
Did he hear that? Sorry. He did not like the first two Transformer movies. Should he even bother with the third one?
Where do you fall on the Transformer movies?
I just moved from Los Angeles, and I have a lot of friends who are working on the robot cars that are going to be in the movie. Not the CG part, obviously, because that's computer-generated.
The new movie that's coming out?
Yes.
Is three the one that's coming out? I'm not up to date on that.
I think it's the third. I've seen about 10 minutes of the first one, and I couldn't really get into it.
The best one is the cartoon one.
Yeah.
From 20 years ago.
80s.
I won't even mess with this. With the third one.
I like
or
the
any
concept.
Other new ones coming out.
Is Michael Bay doing the third one again?
Yep.
Another Michael Bay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's why I didn't stay in LA.
Let's break it down a little bit. Okay, so we're talking about Transformers, which is like one of the biggest, most popular robot stories available. I mean, kids loved it, you know, when it was a cartoon, and now it's a major motion picture franchise. In terms of pure science, how feasible are Transformers?
Oh, very feasible. Have you seen BattleBots, like the Mechadon? Like,
no.
I'm not sure. Oh, as far as the machine?
Yeah, the machine itself. Like,
Take away the AI.
Take away the AI. Let's talk about something that could actually walk on two legs with two arms and do stuff and perform like a human being and then transform completely into a Mack truck. Both fully functional.
I think it's possible, not to the extent that the movies portray. They're not going to be these magical beings that, I mean, you have to understand that their arm has, it can only morph so much. And the weight. Did you see that horrible, horrible movie, Pacific Rim?
yes.
I saw it.
So did that offend your robotic sensibilities?
Yes.
What about it?
Oh, my gosh. I have a dissertation online that I've done about that movie.
But if you use carbon nanotubes, can't you, like, increase and decrease things
water,
and keep the same volume? I mean, keeps it the same mass?
Nanotubes. Oh, you're being serious.
Yeah.
I was expecting more motorcycles.
This is, like, throwback. Okay, I went to Usenix.
I think he hung up.
I went to Usenix in 2003, and the keynote speaker was, the guy that wrote Snow Crash and Cryptonomicon.
Oh, Neil Stephenson.
Neil Stephenson. And he was talking actually about carbon nanotube technology and that the fact that if you had something and it weighs a certain amount, and because it's because of the properties, you could grab it on the corners and increase and decrease the size of something.
You could also
because it doesn't have the same properties of most natural materials, where there's a shear line, because it can rotate in any direction. So you could actually take something that weighs 5 pounds and you could take it from, you know, 1 inch square to 1 yard square, and it would still weigh 5 pounds. It would just have more empty space in it. Anyway, he was talking about that.
A transformer made out of carbon nanotubes?
Or parts of it.
That also
drives
and is also a semi?
So you could get some of the movement.
And
you know, because that has to be how I just blanked on his name, the leader of the
Optimus Prime.
Optimus Prime.
No.
Bumblebee.
Decepticons.
Not
the new one, but the old one.
Yeah.
Why am I blanking on his name?
Cobra Kai. I don't know.
Karate Kid.
Shredder.
Cobra Commander.
I'm sorry.
Oh, what is his name?
I was more into Ninja Turtles. I appreciate.
All I can think of is Starscream.
Yeah. Hold
just
on.
Because he was annoying. And he whined all the time.
The leader is Prime.
What?
Hold on. Whose leader is Prime bearing a matrix?
What in the world are you talking about?
Megatron.
Yeah. Hold on.
Megatron?
Is it Megatron?
I don't know. I don't have a computer.
Megatron could convert from this, like, you know, huge, like, 30-foot tall robot into, I forgot what it was. It's like a Walther PPKS or something.
It wasn't a boombox.
Converted to a gun. No, that was Soundwave that converted to a boombox. But it would be the size of a gun that like somebody would
actually hold
a
their
human
hand.
Would hold in their hand, not this like big like
yeah.
you
like
know
big
40 foot long gun.
So it would have to be like folding.
So it would have to be carbon you know nanotube technology or something.
Carbon buckyballs where they could just fold in on itself. Possibly.
Or inflatable technology.
Well, actually, I was talking to somebody who's who was at the Geek Gathering, with one of the last Geek Gatherings, was talking about doing, it wasn't 3D printing. It was using polymers and plastics that could be melted down pretty easily and then placed around a bladder, which could be then be inflated, and then the bladder could be removed or come out. And, like, he could do... Mass, he's working on this project that's going to basically make kayaks.
Oh, like an inverted mold kind of.
That's how in the '70s they made those light fixtures. Yeah. They would blow up balloons, and then stream all that stuff around them, and then pop the balloons.
Well, this stuff would actually
light
the light
bulb.
Well, this stuff actually it's a liquid form, and then you would put it out in the sun to bake, and it would basically cook it into place, and then I don't know. It sounds pretty interesting.
Huh.
So you'd be able to do this prefab where you send out to places that wanted to sell. And it's not just kayaks. It would be other products, too. Or
you have to get, like, really specialized bladders, right?
Yeah, we'd include the bladder with it, I guess.
Oh, okay.
That would do it. But you could basically, if you wanted to sell these things, you could have a storehouse full of them. And it scales apparently really well. I have to talk to him a little bit more. All right. 713-526-573. We are approaching the top of the first hour. We still got a little bit of time we could stand to fill if you wanted to call in and be on the air. What's your favorite robot? If you want to,
can we go the whole Pacific Rim thing, though?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, well, DARPA, if you're looking at like what DARPA's doing like with military and even like, you know, warehouse workers and stuff like that, they're doing kind of these exoskeletons where you kind of do step in. It augments, you know, muscles. Yeah, it's mecha. So,
well, they had the one with like the legs. I don't think they had the whole robot, but they had the legs like where it could walk upstairs. And
I've seen the legs, and I've seen really slow arms that just go in and out, and it's got the balancing down.
Did you watch the videos where they're at this point, I guess it'd be cyborg, where they're actually attaching arms to people, where they're attaching it to their nerve endings. Mm-hmm. And so the person's like behind a curtain, reaching behind a curtain and trying to find objects. And first he's doing it with his original prosthetic. Mm-hmm. And he's just kind of guessing, you know, and it's a very just, you know, and finding it, not finding it. But then they put the other one on, and it's actually attached where he has some sensation on the fingertips of the. And he's actually able to pick them up, and it's pretty impressive technology. It was almost like seeing something that, you know, was being faked. Like it was
pretty
impressive.
That's not permanently attached, though, is it? So
they can actually do implants that are, I guess, titanium. They're like screwed into the bone, and it's a permanent.
So you can't like swap out your arm like Full Metal Alchemist. You can't like did
not
they attach?
Like Full Metal Alchemist.
I guess the question
I don't know.
Is...
Let me go check my references at Netflix.
Well, would you basically you could build
that's
a,
what I'm asking.
A mount?
Can you detach it? Yeah, that's what I'm asking.
You would build a mount that could be fused in and actually fused with the bone.
Yeah, and then you can have different
different attachments, like a blender, or like
a Phillips head screwdriver.
That's something that
chainsaw, a boomstick.
I've worked with a company that's planning to do just that, where it was like a makeover show, but instead it was cybernet. No, I'm
pimp
being
my
100%
prosthetics.
Like, yeah, it was actually
wow
prosthetics that can do different. Things.
Well, it was that commercial I saw that were advertising, I don't know, some hospital or medical practice or something. They got that guy who puts on the thing on his head and he climbs into what's basically like some kind of exoskeleton. He's paralyzed from the waist down, but he climbs into this thing and he can walk. It looked like they were advertising something.
Is it a television show?
No, it was a commercial for, you know, some kind of hospital and how
technology research.
How great,
yeah, like GE.
How great our research. No, it was like a hospital. It was like, like it would be some medical outfit that's doing research in this area, but they were showing some of the things that they were very proud of. Obviously super prototype because it was giant and hard to use.
Well, they've done things like that with rats where they can I mean, this was years ago. I remember where they can connect, you know, into the brain of the rat, and they can force it to walk, and they can make a cat do that as well. Well, they did it with a cat, where they made the cat walk, I guess it was paralyzed from the back half of it was paralyzed, and they were able to just connect a couple of wires into its brain and force the legs to move.
Forget, someone was shipping, I think they've stopped. They've been forced to stop possibly, but they were shipping the little robotic cockroach kits where you actually stick the probes into the cockroach's brains. Yeah. You can remote control them until they die. Yeah, you know, I don't either, but at the same time, I'm like, okay, that's a little bit maybe over the top.
Well, we've been making people turn off their radios without any wires for years.
Roaches are so loved.
Oh, you know, that reminds me, like, one of the projects that I always wanted to do when I was a kid. I found this book. It was called The Journal of Irreproducible Results, which was basically these theses written by MIT students, and they came up with these ideas. And one of the ideas in there that the guy said, you know, that he did is that he took a balsa wood airplane and caught four horseflies and then put them in a jar, stuck them in a freezer, made them go dormant, not killed them, and then took them out of the jar, glued them onto the wings of the plane, and then as they kind of came out of their stupor, they would propel the plane.
Wow. And I don't know, did it work?
According to his thesis,
it
should work.
Freezing if he did it properly, because we used to do that with grasshoppers. They would take, you could actually purchase, they weren't freeze-dried, but they were frozen just enough so that their metabolism went down.
Super slowed for sure.
And then you lay them out on the leaves, like in, I guess, sunflowers or wherever. Whatever they eat that's out there, I don't know if it's not aphids, because that would be ladybugs. But they lay them out on the leaves, the sun thaws them out, and they just start hopping around and eating whatever's out there that they're supposed to. Yeah. Introducing new predators, which is probably not a good thing, but.
Yeah, just ask the Australians about the cane toads.
Huh.
All right. Well,
we've only got a few minutes before we've got a robots and pie question that's coming in. I guess we should wait.
We're
going to
wait for that
for
the second hour, so, Eric.
That's in 3.14 minutes.
Almost, yeah.
Well, we're going to do a Barrett time and all that good stuff, so. We got a couple of minutes here. We got to kind of wind down. But you know, we got Annika O'Brien in the studio talking robots, talking weird freeze-dried grasshoppers, and it's lightly touching upon cane toads. That's a interesting. You know about the cane toads, right?
Are those the ones you're not supposed to lick?
You're not. Or you
I don't
are
think
supposed
I do. Are you
to
supposed
lick?
To?
Yeah.
Are those?
No,
tell me, are they the ones that get really big with and fill up with
they're
gas?
They're giant. I'll tell you the story of the cane toads in the second hour. You have that to look forward to. All right. Well, you are, let's see. It's only almost, we got a minute and a half? Is that what, or less than 15
We've got a minute and 10.
A minute and 10.
Okay. I heard the music come on
Got a minute and a half, yeah, when the jingle starts.
All right. Well, we're going to wind it down and take care of some station business, do the top of the hour thing that we like to do, and keep it all legit and legal here on Technology Bites and KPFT. But we'll come back after that little break, and then we'll... You got a Barrett time tonight, right?
Yes.
So you failed us completely.
Somewhat recycled from last time, but we're going to use it.
Well, you didn't have to say that. I probably wasn't paying attention last time.
I wasn't here last time, yeah.
Yeah.
It's Flicted's Barrett
time.
Oh,
that one.
That one.
That was the best
Barrett
time
ever. It was. I said that, yeah.
All right. Well, you're listening to Technology Bites. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's...
Roofhouse.
And Annika's here, too.
And Annika's here.
Annika.
Annika.
Anaconda.
Usted trabaja duro por su dinero y cuando usted invierte es natural que tenga ciertas demandas. Usted quiere asegurarse que su dinero se administre responsablemente y espere ver lo que invirtió crezca algo que traerá beneficios en lo largo para usted y su familia. Invirtiendo en KPFT le regresa cada vez que escucha. No importa si es por la música o noticias o por la información de lo que pase aquí en el Costo del Golfo. KPFT ha estado transmitiendo desde el 1970 y ha crecido muy cerca a la comunidad que sirve. Por favor, renueve su membresía o haga su primer contribución ahora con una llamada que solo toma 2 minutos. Llame a 713-526-4000, extensión 314, o puede visitarnos en nuestra página kpft.org. Muchísimas gracias. Esto es KPFT Houston.
You can feed your family in KPFT too. KPFT partners with local grocery stores in neighborhoods near you. When you purchase your groceries using KPFT cards, you make a donation to the station. While those nutritious foods help build strong bodies, you can also nourish KPFT with thought-provoking programming. For more information, visit kpft.org or call 713-526-4000, extension 314. Now your food dollars can become pennies for our thoughts at KPFT. Thank you from KPFT Houston, Radio for Peace.
You're listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston. Hey, Barrett, what's happening?
I don't know.
Well, room around town.
We interrupt this skit to bring you
Barrett Time! Barrett Time! Barrett Time!
Yeah. That means it's time for
Barrett Time!
Yeah. Anyway, take it away, Barrett.
All right. I don't think I can hold an illuminated LED to last week's Flicted Time, but I'm going to give it a shot anyway. So, before there were actual robots, there was the imagining of them. More magic than science, these creations of the mind were fueled by the promises of what we might one day be able to build, rather than what was readily at hand. In fact, one of the first mentions of men made from metal is contained in the Kalevala, one of the most significant works of Finnish literature containing epic poetry and mythology that helped define their national identity. In it, a woman is forged out of gold, which, in my mind, beats out any of the talking bronze and clay statues coming to life in the works of Homer, Plato, Pindar, Tacitus, or Pliny. Homer hit closer to home with the stories of Hephaestus, with the Greek god of all mechanical arts, who fashioned two young female robots from gold, living young damsels filled with minds and wisdom. These were probably the first fembots. It wasn't until very recently that technology became incorporated with robot dreams. A mechanical man powered by steam first appears in 1865 work of fiction, or was it, The Steam Man of the Prairies. 20 years later, we ditched the fire and water for electricity in Lewis Cinieron's Frank Reed and his Electric Man. And the year after that, the book The Future of Eve introduced us to the term android. Now, it didn't take long for the Atlantic Monthly to spice things up with The Brazen Android by Douglas O'Connor before they were put back in their place with ML Campbell's article The Automatic Maid of All Work, a possible tale of the near future. In it, a man named John invents a mechanical maid of all work that is powered by an electric battery and is programmed by directly manipulating the maid's circuitry. By the turn of the century, the notion of the robot had entered popular culture, but the name had not. It wasn't until 1921 that a Czech author, Karel Sapik, borrowed the word robota from his native tongue. A robota actually means forced labor and is derived from the word rab, meaning slave. So in his book, Rossum's Universal Robots, Sapik depicts the first robot revolution or machine takeover long before Skynet entered the scenes. 30 years later, Sapik's dream had become a reality in the form of Unimate, the first truly digital programmable robot, a robot designed by George Devil in 1954. Oh, sorry, I'm going to have to take a pause here. We've had a long succession of shiny robots, shiny female robots that were created, got a little brazen, and then were relegated to the home. And now the first digital robot name has the word mate in it. So I'm seeing a trend here. Actually, I'm probably guilty of that. I told everyone I built my robot wife for SCX, but late at night, when we're alone, we mostly play Battleship. Unimate was, in essence, a large computer box joined to another box, which was then connected to a mechanical arm. Unimate's instruction sets were stored on drum memory, and though he was sold to General Motors to transport die castings from an assembly line and then weld them onto car bodies, Ultimate did have a social life. He appeared on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, where he knocked a golf ball into a cup, poured a beer, and then had to go with the orchestra conductor's baton. That is, he tried to conduct the band. As far as I can tell via YouTube, Doc's baton was unharmed. So, after several dozen centuries, our technology's finally caught up with our robo-lust. Robot is now generally defined as a mechanical agent, usually some sort of machine that is guided by a computer program or electronic circuitry. Now, something doesn't have to be fully autonomous to be a robot, and in truth, nothing we have yet to create is fully autonomous. Everything has to come back for a charge, a tune-up, or some sort of service, which may be the silver lining with our new robotic overlords arrive on the scene. Now, here's where things get fuzzy. I still believe that artificial intelligence and machine sentience are a long way off. But that doesn't mean that you can't do your part to speed along humanity's ultimate demise. Getting into what was once considered classical robotics used to be an expensive endeavor. With hobbyist kits, though, now available in the double digits, it's never been easier to get involved yourself or to help a young person down the road of roboticism. Again, we've got Annika O'Brien in the studio to answer our questions and some of yours. But first, we've got to slip back into some missed magic from last week's show. And as Flicted was right to mention during the best Barrett time ever, the Mechanical Turk was one of the first faked robots that still managed to draw a crowd. And along those lines, Bob and Tochtrin Puppet Theater will be holding its 10th annual Puppetsploitation Puppet Slam. A number of set performances will be delivered each night of the slam. Camilla Clements and Larkin Elliott present two new shadow puppet satires, Frogophobia, a Marvin Zindler puppet show, and a salubrious and well-watered an interpretation of the Allen Brothers' original advertisement designed to lure the first residents to Houston. The Meta Delights to the Lowies continue with their work Puppetry APP, featuring Metabot, where an artificial intelligence robot will amaze viewers with its ability to answer questions, offer wry commentary, and perhaps further fake its sentience with a dance step or two. Performances will be held April 4th, 5th, 7th, 11th, and 12th at 8 p.m. the Midtown Arts Center at 3414 La Branche. We also have the April edition of the Geek Gathering happening this Friday night at Cone's Coffee, Beer, Wine, Art, and Darts. Located at 2808 Milam at Drew, Cone serves, well, beer, wine, some coffee, blinky lights, and possibly a robot or two. In fact, if you've got a project, robotic or otherwise, you're invited to bring it out and show it off and maybe even collaborate a little. Things get started a little after 7 and go until the last geek leaves. I believe we're also a stop on the Photo Fest path that night. Two with the exhibit Photo Enforced by Loki. So Annika will also be on hand that night to answer your questions in person and just to geek out in general. Hope to see you all Friday night, but for now, that's it for your romp through proto-robo history, and that's that for Barrett time.
Thanks for that, Barrett. All right, 713-526-5738. You know, I think Flicted's version of that was better.
I'm telling you, I'm going to step down.
Yet the boy, the robot.
He goes slower. There's
but
more.
Did we talk about robots?
There's more buildup. Yeah.
Yet the boy, Robotnik.
Listen to you, Czech.
Puruski.
Hip check.
No. Or is that Czech?
But originally it was Czech. That's why it's Czech.
Yeah, it's German. German. It's Russians. Yeah, I'm your
it
worker.
Could be absolutely nothing.
That's my word.
It may not actually be anything. We just have Flicted's word for it.
You could be on Law and Order with that accent.
Are you wearing a Russian shirt?
Sort of.
Go to a milk bar.
Because yeah.
Is that the movie or the BBS?
It's the movie.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's.
There was a great BBS called The Corova Milk Bar. One of the few BBSs in town run by a woman.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And that was a Houston BBS.
It was a Houston BBS, yeah.
I didn't know that either.
Yeah, I believe it was a Houston BBS. Yeah, I had to have been because I wasn't dialing long distance.
I weren't paying yet.
I didn't have a functioning whistle. All right, 713-526-5738 if you want to be on the air with Technology Bites. I see Groovehouse is lined to call up for us. Groovehouse?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Up next on the second half of the show, we are going to speak with Eric.
Eric.
Hey, Jay.
Hey.
Everyone.
What's going on, Eric? What can we do for you?
Oh, no questions, just observations. And listen, y'all are having such a good conversation. I hate to interrupt it.
No, I'm glad to have you. What's going on? What do you got? What observations would you like to make?
Well, with regards to robots, a few things. As far as, say, real-life robots, my favorites have always been survival research laboratories.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't even thought about those guys a while back when Carl Guderian was running around with all of his weird VHS tapes. You're not familiar with this?
No, what is this?
He and I had a couple of the tapes, and we actually saw Mark Pauling when he came to town one time.
What was the name of the outfit again?
Survival Research Laboratories.
Yeah, this was pre-Robot Wars kind of stuff back in the 80s.
Right, early 80s and mid-80s,
Do you know if they're... I wonder if there's got to be some.
I know
of that.
I looked them up because they were mentioned like six months ago or something. I remember looking them up at some point because they came up in some conversation.
They were just
I had.
Crazy fun
to
watch.
They're still doing shows.
Okay, I see that now.
California.
They've got YouTube videos from 1994. Wow. Yeah.
Well, my favorite one of those to show people online usually is the V2 the V2 rocket engine. Ramjet engine.
Yeah,
that was the Mark Pauline.
Yeah,
that looks really cool. They've got a device called the Hand of God. They've got the V1, the V2, and they've got the six-legged running machine. Shockwave cannon is actually the coolest sounding one.
Yeah, they actually got banned in San Francisco.
They get banned everywhere they go.
That's a sign of a good show.
Yeah.
Because they end up doing a lot of damage, plus they steal a lot of equipment.
to make more robots.
I
was laughing when they said Obtanium because I thought, what do they have to do with Survival Research Laboratories? Because that's what they call it. When they steal stuff, it's Obtanium.
Obtanium,
yeah. So you were running around with Carl in Houston?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I knew Carl from high school and gaming.
Yeah, and Eric used to do a show here on KPFT called The Tower of Babel.
No, that was my Babelthon was a section of my show, but I was on it from 3 to 6 a.m., so
what was the name
I didn't
of the
have much of an audience.
No, but the audience you had was extremely weird. And that was a good thing.
People cleaning up, the pavilion place up north and computer people running mainframes and that kind of thing. So,
well, the Babelthon was an interesting concept I'll always remember. If I recall correctly, you would open up the lines and bring there would be people in the studio and people on the phone all having disparate conversations all at the same time.
Basically, I wanted as much chaos as possible.
It was like dialing into those early dial-in chat rooms, where your party lines, where everybody'd all be on there, and you're trying to have like, oh, you hear a female voice, I'm going to talk to her, and then everybody's trying to talk to her. And
I always saw those commercials, like, hey, we're having a good time, and they had the music on. I never did that, so that's what that was. They just kind of dumped you into
a group line.
So everyone could hear everything.
So this was in, like, the late 70s, right?
Or even
No, this was the 80s. Yeah. This is the early 80s.
SRL was
older than mid-90s when I did that.
But he was doing it on the air.
That's cool.
I didn't really get to listen to my own show during those times because I was too busy queuing up stuff.
Yeah. So there's no recorded.
Yeah, are there archives out there?
I archive that stuff on VHS, and unfortunately, Magnavox. I had a Magnavox tape, VHS. Yeah. And I just set it to record.
That was
while
the thing,
I went
is
out,
you could take your v- you could take your VCR. And connect it to an audio source, and you could set the timer on it so it would record the radio show.
Right.
That was a lot of people archived radio back then. If you wanted to archive your own stuff and you wanted to just set it up, it was total automation.
Well, the problem is now is I've tried it on a DVD VHS box I have, and it won't read it. It just gets static. So I'm going to have to find someone, a professional, whatever, transfer type place that can grab the audio off of it, because I've got a whole box of those shows, but I can't listen to any of them.
Yeah.
I don't know where to go for that kind of thing.
I've got a couple hundred recordings of old Wake Up and Smell the Coffee.
I wonder if the head's just like slightly off alignment.
That's what it is. It's an alignment issue, but I can't.
There are companies that will dump to DVD from a VCR, and they do it pretty cheap, too.
Yeah, because I'd have to have them do that, because I don't think your average consumer can change the head enough to make it align properly.
I would send it off. I know.
Well, you should have boxes of them.
Well, you should have just get one.
I think Walgreens or probably Costco could do
something. Yeah, I could test with one and see what happens.
Yeah, it might be interesting to throw up online or just.
Right. It would be. It'd be great to have that stuff up on MediaFire or something like that.
Right.
eBay for a VHS player.
Well, it's a higher end, but yeah, it might be able to find it. It seems like a heck of an investment for one off. But if you're going to.
The shipping on one of those would probably be as much as the VCR.
I know.
Well, thanks for reminding me about Survival Research Laboratories and educating Barrett on that, because they're a very interesting outfit.
Well, I'm going to try and show up to the Geek Show because the reason why I haven't showed up to any of them recently is I absolutely 110% hate the cold. So.
It has gotten muggy and warm, so you're in no danger of being chilly.
It'll be disgusting and warm. You'll love it.
I'm not used to Houston. Today it wasn't raining, but there was water all around me. It was like
it's called
it was
humidity.
Like, it was a mist, and it wasn't falling. I held my hand out, and my hand was getting wet on all sides. Yeah. And I was like, "What is this magic?" I felt like I was in Chronicles of Narnia.
The lion.
Well, I know. I mean, here people complain. Human. They get off the plane here, and they say, "I can't breathe," and I'm like, "What's the problem?"
It is fairly impressive.
I have a little digital humidity reader in my home, and it said it was 61% humidity.
Oh, that's kind of low.
That's wrong.
Well, that was in my home. With air conditioning filtering out the humidity.
I thought she was going to say she had one, like, implanted in her arm.
Yes.
That'd be cool. Digital humidity reader implanted.
Well, that's my next project.
It's fogged up. I can't read it.
Well, as far as the fictional robots go, if you had a full prosthetic body, like from Ghost in the Shell, you'd probably have one built in.
One would assume, one would assume you'd have all sorts of sensors wired in.
That, to me, is sort of what a robot is. Like a thermostat, I guess, technically, by some definitions. And I get asked this frequently.
Like,
what's a robot?
The simplest robot? The simplest robot would be like a thermostat, technically?
To me, robot, kind of, because I say I do robotics, and then a lot of what I do is small-scale electronics. But you could kind of say it's robotics, because a microcontroller can... You know, like you can have a sensor, like a thermistor, and then it could, or a water sensor of some kind, and then it has an input, and then it has an output, and
it responds to stimuli.
Yeah,
and then it has
an output. Yeah, exactly, and it causes, and that to me is kind of a definition, but like a toaster, by some people's definition, now newer toasters could sort of fall into that category.
I think it's extremely offensive to call a robot a toaster. I'm just saying. That's what I learned from Battlestar Galactica.
You're offended for all the robots?
For the Cylons.
Although, for at least for the Cylons.
As long as the toaster doesn't talk.
Or shoot back.
There's one
like,
that...
Like Red Dwarf, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. I was thinking about like the toaster and hardware wars.
Oh, yeah. Well, that was more space travel-y, though.
That was more of a spaceship than a robot. But, yeah. All right, Eric.
So if that's the case, then NetBSD has achieved their goal.
Of
NetBSD,
what do they want to do?
NetBSD's big joke was always like their picture they used was of a toaster.
Oh, getting installed in a toaster.
Because their thing was they wanted the NetBSD people wanted to put NetBSD on everything, and so toaster was the joke
NetDuino.
Of like to get NetBSD on something.
If you're familiar with the open source platform Arduino,
NetDuino's cool, but I don't and that's hard. I shouldn't say it on air, but I don't like having to program in Microsoft frameworks.
Yeah, I was going to say .NET is not.
It's not proprietary. It's not free.
Is .NOT.
Oh, there you go.
Arduino. This sounds familiar.
Funny. It's
you know about Arduino.
Yeah.
There's a ton of we had a pile of it show up at geek gatherings
really?
On occasion.
That's well, then you'll have another pile this geek gathering.
Are you bringing a pile?
I'm actually going to bring a pie as well.
Oh, nice.
I've yet to install much on it, but
we'll have some Raspberry Pis out too.
Yeah.
So we need to bring a big TFT screen or something where we can.
All right, when can we have our first robot death match? When do we get
death?
To have?
Robot Wars?
Like Robot Wars, where like, you know...
Do you mean like two robots fight, or do you mean like the robots kill the humans?
No, the robots fight.
I've already done that.
Robots fighting. I would watch more like robot fighting things, or I would get involved if they would allow more rules. Well,
that's
why.
Like
just robots destruction, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and crying makes me rusty.
What about
my face is leaking.
Really, your idea of robotic competition is like Deep Blue playing chess, winning on Jeopardy or something like that.
And vacuuming my floor.
All right. 713-526-5738. Eric, are you done? Do you have anything else you want to remind? You want to take us down any more nostalgic roads?
One other thing was pie.
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 P-I or P-I-E?
Sawdust pie from a place in Brenham called Made in Heaven or something like that.
What kind of pie?
Sawdust?
Musty Heaven Sandwich Shop.
What kind of pie?
Called Sawdust Pie.
Sawdust Pie.
It's got coconut, pecans, banana, caramel, whipped cream. Looks like it even has some peanut brittle on it.
And sawdust.
Still hold it together. And you get your fiber that way. That's always
great. Right. Once it bakes, maybe it looks kind of like sawdust.
Yeah.
It sounds good, though.
Melamine pie.
It is wonderful. It's
you guys
some
are
of the
just
best pie
over
I've
the
had,
top
so.
Pie people. You mean just like, you know, it's not really a pie. It's kind of like some kind of thing.
It's an amalgamation
shape.
Of goodness that is, yeah, perfectly
is it a cobbler?
Shaped.
It's just
it
sugar in the shape of pie.
It holds its shape. I mean, the egg whites help gelatinous. Keep the structure. I mean, as far as geeking go, I know baking, so.
Okay. Well, you know, my wife is a big baker, and she makes all of her crusts from scratch, you know, and cuts up all the fruits or whatever and puts all that together. It's a
high crusts are an art, and that's one art I haven't mastered, so.
Well, eventually a light will come on. You just have to keep working at it. All right, Eric, thanks for your call.
Okay, thank you.
Right, see you on Saturday or Friday. I mean, okay. Bye. Now, you know, your pies are not pies. Do you even cook, like, are cream pies, like, they're not baked in an oven, are they?
Yeah, they are. They are can they? Be.
They can be, but no, usually no, usually though. The
it's like
the pie crust is cooked, it's, and then
it's really
then
just
it's filled.
And you cook, like, the chocolate cream pies appear to be, like, almost like a pudding that's a little thicker, so it might have, like, a gelatin, I think.
Because you could basically really just make a thing of pudding. And
well,
put
anything you put in a pie shell is...
Also, pie.
But it has to be thick enough, and then when you refrigerate it,
there's
structural integrity increases. And
ice box pies.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like you pour something in and put it in the refrigerator.
Like Texas
and then
that's
gels.
Like a jello pudding pie, though.
Right.
See, I said pudding. I'm good in Texas.
Pudding. That's
me speak good.
You gotta see y'all. Y'all is the magic word.
That's the one I can't get. You know the funniest one? So I went into this this fast food establishment that I had never been in about a month and a half. But thanks for the spoiler, jerk. about a month and a half, 2 months ago.
I was just trying to think of a burger place you may not have seen before.
I assumed that, somebody said it was like In-N-Out Burger.
How do you say it? How do you pronounce it?
Well, this was the thing. I went in there and I said, I would like a Wahata burger. And the guy, this is actually kind of a funny story. He was like, a Whataburger? I go, no, a Wahata. I thought he was saying a what burger?
What do you want?
Yeah, a what burger? I said and then I said the number one, but without the other things, just that alone, because I knew I couldn't say the word. And then a friend of mine later texted because I had mentioned this on a social networking platform that how do you pronounce this word? And I get a text from like three different people that are like, it's Whataburger, and with like the phonetics.
H2O. You say water. I think.
Yes.
Is that how you guys do it?
They say water. Yeah, Whataburger.
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 But how do you actually say it in Texas? What I'm. It's just you. I say
the commercial tells you clearly. What?
The Texas way is W-H-U-T.
Whataburger.
I just moved here, so I don't have the television.
But a lot of people do call it Whataburger.
Yeah, that's the old school Texas way. That's what my grandparents and their friends called it in the 60s and
they
70s.
They have so much food. The portion sizes here are insane.
Wait, it's Texas.
Yeah.
If you want to flip out about portion sizes, go to Kelly's.
Kelly's, is that an Irish
country
pub?
Cooking? No, it's it's a cop who retired
place.
That made like there's maybe five or six of them. They're all south of Houston.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like American country, like
Kelly's.
Small town food. But yeah, the portion sizes are huge. Actually. A friend of mine, his dad liked to take people that had come from out of the country there straight off the plane
and act like it was
just to freak them out.
They're like, would you like tapas? Let's go to Kelly's.
So my, for
you
example,
just want to nibble.
my friend had a friend from England. It was a friend from England and Holland, but the guy,
they don't have
England,
flavors there.
Well, I'm not going to say it. So they took him there, and the guy ordered whatever food. And, of course, first they bring out the drinks. And they bring out his iced tea, which is...
Sweet tea.
It's like 64
gallons.
Ounces or whatever. You know, it's huge. And so the British guy, like, they set it down in front of him, and he's like, oh, my God, they've brought me a Voss.
So to finish my Whataburger story earlier, that's a good segue into the completion of my story, which I was not going to tell. So I said, can I also get a large chocolate shake? And he goes, you mean the small chocolate shake? And I said, no, I'm a big girl. I can handle a large chocolate shake. Swear to God, puts his hand on his hip, grabs the bottom of this vase, pulls it up, holds it above his shoulder, does that little head groove around, and goes, you mean one of these? And I said, it is a ginormous styrofoam vase.
You could spend a couple of laps in that to work on
it. I said, is that the milkshake cup? Because it looks like just like a slurp, like a giant soda, Slurpee, or like a, you know, a, what do they call it, a super gulp.
Would you like a chocolate shake in your bucket?
Yes, yes. It's like, let me bring my truck around. you could fill the tank. And I was like, well, how big is a small? Because he had suggested a small, and he pulls up this large, but not as large, styrofoam cup. And so I had one of those, but I only ate about half of it, and I felt like a wuss.
That's okay. If you go to back to Whataburger, if you go to Whataburger, they don't even have a small onion rings. They have medium and large.
Because they're so big that if you want...
But why don't they just call the medium their small?
Why don't they just relabel everything? They don't. Yeah, I remember that. Like a small...
Can I get a venti?
Yeah.
We're just going to not include that. It exists, but we don't sell it.
I refuse to use Starbucks naming conventions when I go to Starbucks. I never use them. I say small, medium, and large. It's all I ever say.
They know. I mean... All right.
I know, because... They know what you want.
All right, we got some calls in the line. The food show has been interesting, and we'll probably we'll revisit this. And a Californian makes her way through Texas, not Texans.
I'm not a Californian. I'm not a Californian. Happen to have lived there.
Where you lived there for how long?
8 years.
Okay, that's
don't
long
judge enough. Me. Nine.
Where from before that?
Sweden.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. Not Minnesota. Oh, yeah, sure. It's like Fargo in here now.
It's a lot of Swedes and a lot of multi-generation Swedes, American from Swedes in Minnesota.
Swede. All right, Rouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up?
All right, up next on the show, we are going to speak with Kenneth.
Kenneth, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello there.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. Well, I've enjoyed the discussion about Whataburger, but no one recited or came up with the old Whataburger commercial I used to hear on the radio back in the 60s. So.
What was that?
I'm not sure. I want to embarrass myself and sing it.
Oh, you have to now.
Bring it up.
Serenade me, sir.
It was, if I can remember, I remember some of it. It was like, Whataburger, big and round, always get a quarter pound, onions, mustard, pickles too. Whataburger, you'll love it too.
Wow,
that's
good.
Nice. Yay. All right.
So it speaks to the power of
jingles.
A good advertising slogan.
There you go.
Jingles.
I used to always, also speaking of Whataburger, several years ago would get these calls surveying like, oh, what hamburger or fast food do you like? You know, and I could tell it was some large. They were looking for like the large change, and I would always say, oh, Whataburger. And it always threw them because they didn't really know what to do with the regional. But anyway, I'm calling because we have a friend staying with us. And
what kind of hamburgers does he like?
What's his favorite pie?
I don't know. I haven't asked yet. Anyway, she has a Toshiba laptop and trying to connect to our network. We connect successfully, but it will not stay connected. Now, I have a work computer. In fact, I compared settings side by side, and they seem fine. We have iPad, we have iPhone, we have like every wireless device in the world, and it works fine. And I looked online, and I couldn't really find much that says anything about this sort of problem. But I was hoping maybe y'all could tell me where to even start looking.
All right, so you got a Toshiba laptop that can't stay connected to the Wi-Fi?
Correct.
All right. Is it the only Toshiba laptop that you have there? You said you were trying to mirror the settings off of another computer.
No, it is the only Toshiba we have.
So does it connect at all?
Yes, it connects fine.
And you can get online?
It gets online, and then suddenly it'll drop. Like the little icon in the whatever, that system tray or something like that.
It shows disconnected, but it doesn't like just go away.
No, it gets. In fact, it has this little starburst or sunburst symbol.
Oh, like it's loading. Kind of.
All right, so
yeah.
You know what? How old is the Toshiba?
Hold on, let me see.
I mean, approximately.
Cindy, about how old is your computer? 3 years old.
Okay, so the one thing you might want to try first is just going to the Toshiba website and check their download section for updated drivers for the Wi-Fi.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Because sometimes that'll help clear things up.
All right.
I'm assuming it's probably wireless G. If it's 3 years old, it's probably not N, but it's probably G.
Yeah, and we have an old, AT&T two-wire whatever that we've had for...
Have you...
quite a few years or so.
Yeah. I mean, the fact that all your other stuff is connecting to the AT&T two-wire, no problem, and it's just this guy. Mm-hmm. I'm going to suspect... First thing I would check is the drivers, and mm-hmm. also might want to see if you're getting a better or more prolonged connection if you're up close to the router.
One other thing. How many devices are connected to the network?
Let's see. She's tried it at different times when no one else is around, and so at that time we have our little backyard.
Are there eight devices or more?
No, he said that he connected this by itself with nothing else.
Okay, with nothing else,
and still had the problem.
Do you have AT&T UVerse?
Yes.
Yeah, that's probably your problem. I'm not trying to be one of those people. I would contact them.
He's getting online, though, so all the other machines get online. It's just the Toshiba connection.
But it gets bumped. So if you have AT&T UVerse, you probably have a gateway modem?
Yes.
Okay, then I'm going to say... I would say contact AT&T because you're paying them to... I mean, I've had issues...
Well, the thing is, what they'll point to is that he'll mention it too, is that all of his devices are connecting except this one. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
there might be an incompatibility.
That's why I'm saying, or I'm suggesting updating the drivers, because sometimes that'll level things out. Chances are Toshiba has, produced some newer or more updated drivers for the hardware there. Also might be a firmware update for the Toshiba. So it'd be worth getting all of that stuff up to speed. Yeah. And even if it's not a newer driver for the Wi-Fi or the Wi-Fi device on the computer, just reinstalling it sometimes mm-hmm. helps clear up problems.
Okay.
The driver might just be a little wonky.
Well, if that laptop came out about 2 or 3 years ago, too, that was when they were rolling out like a lot of the new 802.11 standards. So a lot of them, they would actually release the hardware drivers before the standard was completely... done.
Yeah.
So they made a lot of guesses. So there are compatibility issues when the firmware on the routers start getting updated. Suddenly they'll stop working with a lot of those first implementations that were just built around the draft spec. So Jay said, get the firmware and that should probably shoot you straight.
That's firmware and the driver for that. And if you continue to have problems with it, certainly the two-wire that AT&T puts out is not the most robust or reliable.
They may have a workaround though, because back where I was living, I was having issues Apple products for some reason, and I contacted, it was Time Warner, which is notorious for just being horrible, and they were able to fix a couple of things, and I was about 50, well, I was about a third Apple products, a third Linux, and a third Windows.
They also might have, if you can't get it, it might be worth calling AT&T to see what they say.
All
right.
They might have an update, or maybe, there might even be an update they can have applied to your modem itself, but I would start with the computer itself. Though every time I've seen this kind of problem, it tends to be a driver issue with the laptop itself.
Okay.
And I've had really, really good luck reinstalling drivers and having that sort things out.
Definitely worth a try. And I should throw out also, she has said that she's never had trouble like going to a Starbucks or things like that. So, like you say, maybe it's just the.
Well, if you want to get really creative, you can always get your own modem and Wi-Fi hotspot, Wi-Fi access point, and use that. Get something more up to date, more robust.
Yeah,
like
the dual band.
Get an 802.11n Linksys/ Cisco ones, and you're going to get a lot more range. And chances are, it's going to talk to all your devices a lot better too.
Oh, and so just basically use one of ports on the back of the gateway.
What you can do is you can just plug in through Ethernet. Usually there'll be a single Ethernet port on that AT&T UVerse device. Just plug that in, disable the wireless or you change up the wireless and just hang all your devices now off that new router instead of the AT&T one.
That's you might find that you get better range and better performance anyway you just might, with a newer router.
But if you're going to do that, you'll probably have to contact AT&T and have them bridge it for you.
Maybe not. Probably not.
Really?
Yep. No, it'll do a single device.
Well, because I've got Comcast.
Yeah.
Well, that's going to be a cable modem. So even with
Well, even with the cable, I've got Comcast and I've got their Wi-Fi router. Okay. I've just turned the Wi-Fi off and I've plugged my my Wi-Fi router
that's
into an Ethernet. So I don't no intervention from Comcast. Yeah. I don't think you'll need it.
I had to have them bridge mine. I was unable to do it, and they said that they had to put in a code or something.
All right.
They have to do that if you swap out the modem.
I have a dual band modem.
If you swap those two out, they would. Or if you actually have like a true bridge on like business class, that actually is a true bridge where you get a static business IP. Well, cool. Does Bala do it for you, Kenneth?
Yeah, this gives me some stuff to go work on.
All right, well, update us next week.
All right.
All right, thanks for your call.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, right. I've actually had some problems with, it doesn't seem odd to me, but with odd SSIDs, like if I have certain characters, like I've had Apple products that won't remember it. Oh. And that's the only thing I can connect it to because I don't have that problem with any other ones except certain SSIDs.
Are these your own SSIDs that you're coming up with, or are these like work SSIDs?
Yes, no, they're my own.
Huh. It's like, you know, when you see like, hey, Doc, it hurts when I do this, and he says, like, don't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
But it's so cool.
Are you using Russian SSIDs?
I'm doing null space SSIDs. Null space.
All right, 713-526-5738 is the number to call if you want to be on the air. Groovehouse, I see we have some calls in the queue.
Yes, we do.
Emoji.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, I'd like to apologize for changing the subject here back to the original subject.
Back
but
to
I
robots.
Have a question about robots.
Okay. pie-making robots.
You know, these repeating machines in factories like spot welders and benders, they're considered robots. And
Bender.
Then you've got Watson on Jeopardy, who's like, I guess, a supercomputer. And I was hoping you could explain the difference between a robot per se and artificial intelligence. And that's my question.
A machine? Manufacturing, I do consider those robots, like a Fanuc or I guess anything that uses computer numerical control, which is like X, Y, and Z, like M code, G code, to program it and give it a bunch of repetitive tasks. That is a robot by my definition. You could also just classify it as a machine, like a lathe or a mill, anything that you can give it instructions.
Well, would you say, to elaborate on that idea just a little bit, a robot is something that can perform a task
for you.
For you, whereas a machine is something it works in conjunction with a person. The person operates the machine. Like if it's a lathe, I'm running
say,
stuff.
Like, some,
you
like
could give
somewhat
it pre-programmed
robot
instructions,
would be more,
though.
Right, but like a chainsaw is a machine.
Yeah, machines are getting it. That's kind of fuzzy. I guess like more tool. Yeah. So if you classify between like a tool and then a machine. So I guess the big thing is with the robots, you're actually storing the instruction sets with the robots. So they can perform complex tasks. Usually they're predetermined. So like, you know, you're talking about, you know, like Ford making cars. That's all going to be pre-programmed. It's all programmed in. Now, when you get into AI, artificial intelligence, machine sentience, we're getting close. And there's things like the Turing Award where, and this is, I think, what that puppet stuff is going to be doing in a couple days, is there's an award out there to where if you can have like a text-based client talk to a human and talk to another judge, and the judge cannot decipher which one's the human and which one's the computer, that wins the AI.
So it's
Turing
like
test.
Clever bot, but without
booze. But even then, a lot of that's faked. You know, there's so much of this is fake. So when you get into can machines actually think and artificial intelligence, it's really tough. In the 70s,
is Watson an example of artificial intelligence?
No, what Watson is an example of, it's an example of an extremely fast human-based language search where it can
really
take
nice
inference
database.
Pretty much. It's like a Wikipedia on steroids.
Well, the problem with AI becomes how to even test for intelligence.
Yeah, and that's the thing. In the 70s, a lot of people like Stafford Beer, and there were a lot of like cyberneticists that were looking at, okay, we're going to brute force it. We're going to see what it is to be human. We're going to see what intelligence is, and we are going to make these robots think. And they thought like, okay, we'll do branching things. Like when you program a computer to play chess, we'll look at every single possible move, we'll rank the best move, and that's the move we'll take. And that's kind of how things still kind of are. I don't think they're going to go. No, that's what I'm saying. It's not thinking.
I consider it searching or processing.
Yeah, it's not thinking yet.
Because to learn.
Now, there are things like that. Even now, there is like, when we get into like, Bayesian learning and like genetic algorithms, what that does is it puts out like different programs and says, okay, we're going to let these programs compete. Like, let's let these programs solve a problem and we'll just randomize a whole bunch of different things in the program. And whichever program solves the problem the best, we'll take that as our next starting base. We'll take that, we'll randomize a few things, and we'll let it go. So it's kind of like, how Darwinism works in organisms. That's kind of how they're doing thinking like that. But there really isn't any kind of machine that can learn so far.
But you're saying that accumulating more data is learning. That's not – when it comes to, like, AI, I don't consider – I mean, we use the word learn, like machine learning, just because it's easier than having to explain it another way. And when you say learn, everyone knows what you mean. It means, you're, or when you say thinking, it's thinking. Everyone knows what you mean. You don't have to split hairs. But I think it's more collecting.
Well, if you had Watson that didn't answer a question properly, and then the next time it was asked, it answered it properly because it retained the data that the original answer was incorrect. Yeah. Isn't that learning?
Yeah.
Our definition, it really comes down to what do you consider to be
learning. Now at what point are AI and robotics going to interface and we're going to end up with data or C-3PO?
It already is. I mean, we've already got, AI is more like the software. Is that what you mean? Like where the software's controlling hardware?
You're talking about where robots like actually come offline and go do their own thing, right?
Yeah.
Where they can start making.
Like reasoning.
Yeah, reasoning. Yeah. So here's a big difference. While you're right that Watson is learning, the big difference here is that Watson and his algorithms and his software is designed to only do that. He's designed to collect knowledge, to be able to apply these different pockets of knowledge and be able to answer questions based on that. He's not going to suddenly be able to pop out of his question answering mode and say, I am, I exist, let's go eat some pie. Like, that's not going to happen. Yeah. And I think that when robots AI
do some rivets in some cars.
But he probably knows how to make a pie.
He probably knows how to make a pie. He can answer questions about pie.
Yeah, he could probably pull you up a million recipes.
But will he ever know the taste of pie? No.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your call.
Bye.
All right. 713-526-5738. We've got about 20 minutes left in the program tonight. We're getting into a heated discussion about AIs, robots, and pies. So we invite you to participate. I see we have two calls in the queue, but I'll give out the number again, 713-526-5738. Groovehouse.
Yes.
Who do we have up next?
Up next, we are going to speak with Butch.
Butch, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, sir. I was wondering, is there a way that you could either stop somebody from deleting his web history, and then, or like have a backup of it if they do delete it.
Like in your own web browser?
Yeah, like on my computer. If someone else gets on it, if they delete the web history, is there a way I can still find out where they were at and what they were doing on it? Or is there a way I can stop them from deleting it in the first place?
To what
like
end?
A keylogger?
So later on, if I get on it, I can see that either somebody's been on it and where they've been going.
Why would you want to do that?
Because I when I'm gone, I don't expect anybody to be on the computer. But whenever I got home, it was still open, and I just wanted to know who was on it and where they were at on it.
Well, there are monitoring softwares you can install on a computer that will log keystrokes and also record actually what they're doing. You could get a stuff that will do
screenshots. You could even do screen capture.
It'll do screen grabs.
How much does that cost? How do I get it or whatever?
You'd probably also need a relatively large hard drive that it's recording to, depending on how many hours.
Maybe not. Let's see.
I know that there are like some it's not NetNanny, but there are some kid monitoring programs that you can install that will like let the kids think they're going all their places, but you can actually see what's going on.
NetNanny and the stuff that's used to monitor what kids are using a computer for, it may not necessarily capture. I mean, you could do screenshots, like Annika mentioned, that might take a little bit of space, but there will be a thing that record what web addresses they go to, what they typed in.
Here's one, the way we do it at work. If you want to do this, you could always either if you want to drop a little bit of money, you could always get like a small office, home office
like
gateway
server.
Router.
Yeah.
And you can actually put in like, you know, restrictions and you can see where things are going, or a lot of their like a lot of little appliances
all
they'll actually log. Because the thing is they can hide what they're doing on the computer, they can try and erase their tracks in the history.
Yeah, that's,
but
that's
if you're
trying to get around
you
it,
can
or
actually,
if I can stop that.
You can actually sniff and see where they're going.
How?
If you want to.
And you can even prevent.
Let me ask you this, do you, not to totally set you up with this, but do you have another computer in the house?
I've got a laptop, that's it.
Okay, so you just got one machine?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's a program, for example, if you just do a Google search on monitoring software, you'll find things like Spy Agent, Web Watcher, PC Pandora.
Web Watcher, yeah.
They run, you know, anywhere from about $20 to $100 or so. Like this one that's called Spy Agent that claims to monitor all the activities on a computer is $70.
Oh, okay. I mean, and like, I don't have to worry about any kind of viruses or anything.
You always have to worry about.
Get
viruses.
It from a reputable source like CNET.
And don't go get a freebie thing that looks suspect. I would go.
Well, you don't want something that's going to monitor your computer.
And if it says we'll scan.
You don't want to get something that's going to monitor your computer and then report that to a third party.
Okay.
So you want to get it from a reliable company, but also be careful where you download it from, like Annika was mentioning.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do your research, but really, I mean, your best bet for protecting your computer is to lock it down.
Well, everybody knows my password, and that's just...
You can change that.
Change it.
You can make it where people don't know your password. You can also set a BIOS password on the computer where you can turn it off, and you have to have a password to even turn it on.
Oh, okay.
Now, what browser do you use?
It's Chrome.
Now, there are, it looks like, go search. There are some plugins for Chrome and Firefox. Because apparently certain parents, their teenagers, are deleting web histories. So you can add in an extension into Chrome. You put in your password, and it disables the ability to clear the web history. Which is also kind of nice, because instead of taking, like, kind of a spying position to see what they're doing, it'll let the person know that, hey, you can't erase where you're going. So if you're trying to deter bad behavior, that's one way to do it.
Oh, okay. How do you make it to where they cannot delete it then?
Search for, so if you're using Chrome, go to Chrome, and you can, you know how to get Chrome extensions?
What if they're going to use Internet Explorer?
Or, that's the thing, They could always pull up a different browser.
You can't control which browser they're going to use. Chances are, if they're stealing computer time, they're probably using Internet Explorer.
You can if
Explorer.
You delete the other browsers.
It's hard to delete Internet Explorer, though.
Just remove all the browsers, and then problem
if
gone.
If you remove all of them, and then you put a password that nobody else knows to where they cannot install any new software.
Yeah, but he can't keep the login password a secret. He's not going to be able to keep that a secret.
Yeah.
So there are some web monitoring or computer monitoring softwares out there.
A good one to get and by y'all standards.
You know, that's not something that I would necessarily do myself.
Yeah.
You know, if I had kids, I might consider it, but I would, you know, to me, you're coming at the problem, trying to make life easier on yourself by not having, you know, private passwords, but you're making it harder on yourself by trying to have to learn this whole new thing. I mean, you've got a simple solution available to you.
Yeah.
Or create a second account for yourself and don't give the password out.
I mean,
if I create an alternate screen name thing for the computer, will they be able to delete it off of that if they're not a computer administrator?
Yeah, they could delete the history if they're not the administrator, probably. Yes.
Oh, okay.
But go online, take a look around for some, you know, if you want to do the monitoring thing, just be real careful because you may not like what you see. You know, if they're using your computer and you're actually concerned enough to want to monitor it, then, you know, you are going to basically might see some terrible stuff because when people use a computer that are using one surreptitiously, they might be going to sites you don't
You might want to wash your keyboard afterwards.
Yeah. All right, Groovehouse, who do we have up next?
All right, up next.
A bit of a speed round, I think.
We are going to speak with Gary.
Gary, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
I heard you guys talking about the two-wire gateway and bridging.
Yeah.
I actually had to go through that because they set up the two-wire in another room, and instead of running a wire, what I did is I got it's called an amped wireless device. It covers like 10,000 square feet of space as far as signal, and I bridged the two together. And that allows me to hang my network, which is in my office, and get out to the Internet through the gateway. And it works very well, and it's been very reliable. The only thing you needed to do is have it log in to the two-wire with the password that's given to you.
Okay.
And it works well because it's a router, essentially, and I have all my systems plugged into it.
Nice.
So I just wanted to let you know that. That's all.
All right. Well, appreciate the information. Thanks for calling.
All right. Bye. Bye.
All right, Groovehouse, who's up next?
Up next, we're going to speak with Eric.
Eric, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, what can we do for you?
Okay, I have a question for a relative who's here, and she wants to know, she has an old computer, IBM 340 personal computer running Windows 95, and she's going to sell it, but she would like to know how to remove personal data from the hard drive.
Well, I'm wondering, who's going to buy this thing?
We don't know who's going to buy it, but she has it like on eBay or something.
Really? Okay. Well, on a computer like that, what you might want to use is there's a program called D-Band Boot Nuke.
Okay, what is it called? D-Band?
It's called Derek's Boot Nuke.
Yeah.
It's D-Band, and if you Google search, it's basically, I don't know, do you have a computer that'll let you create a CD?
Yeah.
Because you have to make a bootable CD, and what this does is you boot the computer. Now, it's still Windows 95 may not be bootable.
No, you can boot a Windows 95 machine, but what's going to happen is you're going to blow away the entire operating system, not just the files on there. So if that's what he's after.
And I'm going this route for a reason, Barrett, but I think that whoever is interested in buying this old
computer is not going to want Windows 95.
Is not going to care about what's on there, because they're probably going to turn around and install Unix on it
or
something. Oh, or the other option is that if you have the recovery disks that either came with the computer or that you were told to make when you bought it. You don't have that?
No.
I tell you, I honestly don't think you're going to get much money for this computer. But what's that?
Okay.
But if you want to wipe out all the data that's on there, you can look at making a boot disk, Derek's Boot Nuke. If you just do a Google search, D-Band format hard drive, you'll find the software. Basically, it takes you through making a CD that you can boot the computer up with. When you boot the computer, it will give you a menu and take you through the process of wiping out all the data that's on the hard drive.
Oh, okay.
That would be your best bet if you're going to sell the computer. Obviously, if you wanted to try to save the software and stuff, you'd have to do a little bit more fine-tuning and go in there and delete files. And that's a little bit, daunting of a task. And it wouldn't guarantee that somebody couldn't recover that information once they took possession of the computer. So your best bet is to just wipe it completely clean, let the new owner install whatever they want to on it.
Nuke it from space.
D-Band. We'll Google that and go through what you just said.
All right, good luck. Thanks for your call. Bye.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Trying to think.
Nobody finished my quote.
It was an aliens quote, right?
Yeah.
Game over, man!
Similar time frame.
But okay. Not the same. What were you looking for? What was the act-knack you were looking for here?
It's the only way to be sure.
There we go. Okay. Let's see, Windows 95 computer on eBay. We're going to take a look at completed auctions.
Good luck finding one for over $20.
$6.
Yeah. Shipping on that's going to be
more than you paid for the computer.
Let's see, we're going to sort by price highest first.
By the pound.
Wow, ISA computer with 3 ISA slots.
How much?
$472.
Huh.
Wow.
Computer with 3 ISA slots for DOS, Windows 95, basic ISA, $399.
What?
Windows 95 IBM ThinkPad for $389.
Man, I've got a compact Pentium 90.
Put it on eBay.
I've got an NEC Mobile Pro 900.
eBay that thing. I got an Atari 400.
And a little Hewlett Packard.
Honest to God, these are all completed auctions. These are.
Yeah, they didn't get paid. All right, we got one last call.
$300 for a Gateway 2000.
It's for a museum,
probably.
I might be able to put the Gateway 2000 that I have in parts back together.
I'd sit corrected. They might actually get a few bucks for it. Toshiba Satellite 2065 CDS Color Laptop with Windows 95, $229.
Intermittent Wi-Fi connectivity.
Probably doesn't even have I'm sorry, it doesn't have Wi-Fi.
And Bluetooth. No, there's actually a tooth that's painted blue on it.
All right, Groovehouse, who do we have?
All right, we're going to talk to Ron.
Ron, you're on the air with Technology Bites.
Yes, I have a question for the robotics expert.
Okay.
As far as the Mars rover, I don't know if she's familiar with NASA's project. She probably is. Are they using AI with that?
You know what? I'm not sure I could... you mean the Curiosity, right?
Yeah, I'm very curious about it because it seems like it seems to be learning how to do stuff and how to adapt and whether they talk to it and communicate with it. But post-HAL 2001 movies...
Okay, there is no AI. There is no AI at this time. We have not achieved artificial
intelligence. You mean autonomy? Are you asking?
I'm talking about I know there is some AI out there, but I just wonder if they have...
No, there's no AI.
None on the Mars rover.
In control. They're controlling it, but it has to learn where it is and what it's doing, and I'm just curious if you knew anything about that.
That's programming.
But a lot of it is that the humans back on Earth get the visuals back, get the data back, and then they decide what they want it to go do. Yeah. So they tell it what to do more than it decides what to do.
I understand that, but it also has to learn and know where it is to...
nobody knows...
It can learn. It can learn that.
You know what I'm. Learning is a broad term. That's right. Not exactly.
So what is your concern?
I mean.
Well, okay. There's no artificial intelligence, but there is programming that is sophisticated enough that the first of all, through GPS, it can be aware of where it is. It'll know its coordinates. It can be given data as to what is in that sector that it's in or the quadrant that it's in or the location it's at so that it knows, knows where it is in the same sense that your phone knows where it is.
Right. So you're not, no one's admitting there's actually an AI.
We're telling you that there's
existing.
Not. We're telling you that there's not. We're saying there's not an AI. We have not sent a smart robot.
I saw the movie.
Now, yeah, there's no AI on Mars. However, we're not too sure about one of the smaller moons of Jupiter. I heard Io. You should not go there.
all the rest of the planets you can access, but
leave this one alone.
Yeah. There's no AI on the rover.
And I think the problem is you get outlets like HuffPo saying there's artificial intelligence and blah, blah, blah. And people don't understand. They use the word artificial intelligence when what they mean is
artificial
sensors.
Sweetener.
Yes. when what they mean is...
Or autonomous.
Now, the rover has nothing but the Splenda probe.
Now, was Johnny Five, was that AI?
Pete was going to say something. Let Pete.
No, I said there's no AI on Io.
Yeah.
EI?
EI.
All right. Well, I think we're going to...
So Johnny Five was not sentient.
No, that's a number.
Number Five is alive.
He was cute.
Stop it. I'm
going to
stab you.
Get stabby in there.
That's violating one of the laws of robotics, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
Okay, prove you're not a robot. Kill me.
I'm not a robot.
We didn't get to do favorite robots.
No.
Okay, we've got time. We can do a favorite.
We missed some of the interview, all that kind of stuff. Well, we can do favorite robots around.
Favorite
now?
Robots?
Favorite robots?
The maid from the Jetsons.
Yeah,
Rosie. That's Rosie. I was going to take that one. I got Bender.
You should have taken
that one. That was an easy one. Come on.
Danger Will Robinson.
Oh, even better.
I think he has the greatest voice for a robot.
My favorite robot is the little one in Star Wars that freaks out and runs away from Chewbacca when he screams at him.
Oh, yeah.
That one has a name.
I'm going to go scary with Maximilian in The Black Hole.
Nice.
That was scary. The Disney one.
That was cool.
Oh, yeah.
I had nightmares about that when I was a kid.
What is your favorite robot?
I'm going to go an easy one, Data.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. My mom had a crush on him. So I think
the Brett Spinner.
On Brent or on Data? On the actor?
No,
on
Data.
Brett Spinner's a Houston guy.
Yeah,
But Data.
Yeah, he's the actor. Yeah. That's the actor.
I know.
Oh,
I
mean
know,
actual Data. Oh, so unless he's pasty and
all right.
mechanical,
logical.
No.
an episode of The Simpsons where the robot from Lost in Space in the museum, and it opened up, and there was a skeleton of a guy inside of it. All right. Well, you've been listening to Technology Bites. We'll be back next week. I'm Jay Lee.
I'm Peter Hughes.
I'm Flicted.
I'm Barrett.
And he's
Groovehouse.
And she's
Annika.
And we'll see you.
See you at the Geek Gathering.
Oh, yeah. We should.
Geek Gathering.
KPFT's weekday morning programming features a mix of news and visionary public affairs. We encourage you to tune in. Your morning starts at 5 with a mix of great insights and ideas, including discussions of science and technology, public policy, international affairs, and more. Stay with us at 6 for BBC News, delivering award-winning journalism. Then at 7, it's Democracy Now!, hosted by Amy Goodman. There's a news update at 8 with BBC, followed by Open Journal at 9. It's our AM drive time lineup. Get an informed start to your weekday morning right here on 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org online.
Come out and enjoy the streets with your neighbors. The City of Houston has begun a new program called Sunday Streets HTX. For the next three first Sundays, the city will close a stretch of streets from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. and open it to leg traffic. April 6th, the route runs along White Oak and Quitman from Heights to Fulton. May 4th is the Westheimer turn between Hazard and Yoakum. The June 1st route is Washington Avenue from Studemont to Market Square. Come on out and mingle, walk, bike ride, skate, talk, and get to know your community. For more information,